Peter Hill Explains, where I invite you to join the science teaching conversation with me about Japan's greatest victory, Britain's worst defeat. The mastermind behind this is, and the author of this book is, Colonel Masanobu Tsuji, spelled T-S-U-G-I, I must admit, I think he's a bit spectrum-y in terms of his obsession. I think he's probably unhealthy in the way that he's dedicated himself to fighting the British. And I think there's some holes in the story about how he just gets people to build an airfield here and there. And his recount of some things are just a bit iffy. And I noticed that the Japanese are invading and they're not taking any prisoners. There's no mention of prisoners taking. So this is a bit of a scary thing. There's also, he's got 1 foot in the 20th century and another foot in the 12th century with the sumo warriors and the respect to the cult of personality and the cult of personal power. So he's got, on one aspect, high morals. On the other aspect, he won't think twice of invading with the Japanese army dressed in Thai uniforms carrying a white flag. And we're seeing a whole lot of thinking of how to actually do things. That they seem to be the most untrustworthy people I've ever come across. Okay, a breakthrough at the Jitra line. The most urgent work after landing at Singora was to establish and organise the army headquarters. Next, without delay, we had to attack towards the Pirak River at the Kedah province. On the evening of the 9th of December, after driving off enemy detachment, I caught up with the front line of the Seiki detachment for the second time. At the Karamara Bridge, the Karamata Brigade, which had completed its landing, was ordered to join the Seiki Regiment that evening, and with it break through the frontier. Major General Sandro Kawamara came from my native town. He had achieved a consistently high reputation at the junior military school, right through Staff College. A junior military school? Godfather, they've really brainwashed these poor chaps. He had shown himself courageous on the battlefield and was credited with an ability to quickly see through the general situation in battle. By chance, I met him at Sado village when he arrived there. About an hour previously, the second department had moved towards the frontier for the purpose of searching out the enemy's positions. Hurriedly pursued them, and on the way, twice we heard heavy explosions ahead of us. We hurried on, travelling by night, and formed the opinion that the enemy was blowing up bridges. Thank goodness, you good old POMs. When we came to the first bridge on the Thailand side near the frontier, we found, as we expected, that it had been blown up from its foundations. A very powerful charge of explosive must have been used. Quote, the British must have munitions to spare, end quote, we thought, as we surveyed the damage. Our mud-stained engineers, you have to have engineers which are mud-stained, were hurrying to make repairs. There was no time to wait for them to finish. Leaving our vehicles, we went onward foot and started to cross the frontier. At the end of the hour, we ran into a gate across the road at a customs inspection post. Undoubtedly, we were at the frontier, but there was not so much as a puppy in sight. This is suspicious, someone remarked. Where can the Seki detachment have gone? Why is there no sound of firing? Is this the enemy attempting to ruse us of some kind? It was extremely improbable that the Seki detachment would have detoured far off the main road, for it was impossible to move through the jungle in the darkness. The situation seemed ominous. It was quite inconceivable that an armed force could be blocked by such a crude obstacle as a gate across the frontier. It would be a relief to hear even a rifle shot. It was the dead of night, and 9th of December, when I passed through the gate. I stood alone at the ominous frontier. I intended to go as far as I forward as I could until I met friend or foe. Watchful and sharp as a needle, I zigzagged south along the asphalt road, crossing from left to right as I advanced. When I had gone 400 or 500 meters, I heard someone squirming along the side of the road. I approached with stealthy footsteps. Lowering my heart, myself, I said, friend or foe. Shortly afterwards, I vaguely discerned some soldiers holding rifles, wearing steel helmets. "Is the CQ department?" I asked. "Yes, it is detachment." "Where's the detachment commander?" "Hello, Mr. Shushi. I'm here, replied a kindly voice from Lieutenant Colonel Saki from among the rubber trees nearby. Finding his vehicle, he could not cross. His vehicles could not cross mass bridges. Detachment commander, leading barely 200 men on foot, had, on his own responsibility, crossed the poorly guarded frontier. He had been ordered to stop at the frontier and to investigate the enemy's positions, but, he said, as the enemy was not there, I could not investigate him. He was as calm, as self-possessed, as if on maneuvers. This man knows what he's doing, I thought. I smiled to myself. He can certainly carry on. Before long, the detachment started to move forward. The adjutant, Captain Oshma, a young officer on the 1935 period at the military academy, advanced at the head of the column of two men. They walked about 500 meters without meeting any obstacles. There's a map there. You could not tackle. The road had become a trench 20 or 30 meters in depth and more than 100 meters in length. It had been blown up at the foundations. What? Okay. How you blow up the foundations of a road? Such a large scale domination, how much explosive must have been used? It is the enemy we must fear. Is it the enemy you must fear? No. We have to worry about the quantity of gunpowder he has available to use. Enemy shells began to drop behind and in front on us. We were involuntarily fascinated by the frequency of the bombastic explosions. Yes, it is blind shooting which obstructs repair at the demolition points, but the range isn't too accurate, is it? Hearing the comments by the young captain on the enemy artillery fire, the men nimbly rushed out in intervals between the firing to look into the shell holes. Let us go on until we meet them. Advancing southwards for another 1,000 meters, they found their way to a small bridge about 20 meters across. It had been so badly smashed that little trace of it was left. Crying, "Oh, again," they crossed to the southern side of the stream, splashing through the water. We were impressed by the behaviour of the men ahead. "Ah, Mr. Staff Officer, it is the enemy," and the adjutant in breathless expectation pulling my sleeve to attract my attention. Immediately, from 10 meters in front of us, doubtful voices could be heard, and finally encountering the enemy, we actually felt relieved. The adjutant and I proceeded to take cover in a ditch over the left-hand side of the road, and the enemy machine guns opened heavy fire. Bullets beyond count flew, dragging tails with greens and blue lights overhead. They're firing higher, but soon will soon drop lower. Strange, rustling voices were heard in the rubber trees. Patrols lay motionlessly, cautious, repressing all movement while seeing how the land laid. Enemy soldiers in some strength were apparently right in front of us. They were perhaps coming to make a sortie. Tightly grasping the handles of our sabres, we unfastened the safety catches of our pistols. We stood on guard. Shells again fell to the right and left, in front and rear. A record-breaking number of blue-green signal flares were being sent up from the enemy lines continuously. Two rounds, three rounds. The sounds of engines starting, apparently motor vehicles or armoured cars, for which the enemy seemed to have a large number. Soon, one battalion from the Saki Department rushed to the scene. "I say, get to that rubber plantation from the right. Look sharp. Enemy is escaping." 40 or 50 soldiers, flashing their swords, charged like shepherd dogs into the darkness amongst the rubber trees. Voices cried out and groans could be heard sporadically amidst the reports of firearms. Meanwhile, the sounds of engines appeared to move away and gradually became fainter. Under the eyes of the sentry and of the adjutant and his orderly concealed in the ditch, the enemy was escaping without even making a sortie. Although he had many cannon and machine guns, it was menaced only by one small section with a handful of guns. We now understood the fighting capacity of the enemy. The only things we had to fear was the quantity of munitions he had and the thoughtlessness of his demolitions. Some people might think it inadvisable for staff officers to charge of operations to move at the very head of the advance guard, or perhaps they might condemn such action on his part as merely a search for glorious deeds. The adverse criticism and comments are entirely mine. They weigh on my mind. For a moment earlier, with my own eyes, I had seen the skill of the enemy. The enemy had a choice battlefield, and our whole plan would have been thought out in accordance with his movements. The accurate estimation of the tactics and efficiency of the enemy and the fearless devising measures of the defeat on the actual ground are the most excellent means of achievement of victory. Subsequently, our tactics and leadership on the Malayan campaign were determined according by the observations made at the commencement of hostilities. After the skirmish, one armoured car and a small number of corpses and weapons were abandoned. First prisoners of war taken were all Indian soldiers of short stature, like the Japanese. They were probably Gurkhas. However, not showing any particular hostile feeling or sign of fear of Japanese soldiers, they were reconciled to their defeat by being arranged before a camera. It appeared these prisoners typified the mentality of the Indian soldiers who would be fighting against us, and they were all British armies good for consumptions. We heard the excellent the extent of the knowledge. The enemy immediately ahead of us was reconnaissance until they left the British Indian Division, the main forces of which were holding a fortified positions at Chagun and Jitra. Another story comes to a close. It's been a pleasure sharing this moment in time with you. May you discover truly amazing things, understand them, and tell others. Thanks for listening.